is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
No better way to kick off a Sunday morning than right here on the Lombardi Line, part of the DraftKings Sunday pregame power up. Three shows, 5 hours, all you can eat game day prep, airing every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, on DraftKings Network during this NFL season. We got the Sweat, the Lombardi Line, Brent Musburger's countdown to kickoff, built for all in NFL fans. As for us, the next 2 hours are going to be jam packed. It would not be the Lombardi Line without three-time Super Bowl winning NFL executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Throughout the course of the next couple hours, we're going to go through every single game on the NFL Week 7 slate. And if it is anything, Michael, like what we got yesterday in college football, we're going to have some fun today.
Yeah, you know, my question of the day is, since Caleb Williams is going to be an owner of a team, do you think he fires Lincoln Riley for not closing that game out or winning that game? I mean, I just want to know. Like, you got to ask him a question in the vein of an owner, right? I mean, here's the guy that won the Heisman and, you know, no expectations for USC. Why would there be? You're only one of the highest paid coaches in the country.
I love
that Utah did what they did. Love it.
Love it. Oh, yes. And that was one. Well, I had a couple clunkers yesterday from the betting standpoint. Utah money line, feeling good about that one. But
yeah,
I would say you could ask Caleb Williams the question. But after the loss, you know, he's not taking interviews, apparently. Lincoln Riley doesn't want his players to talk.
It's hard to find owners. You know, it's hard to get them to talk. You can understand that. You can completely understand that. What a day, though. What a day. Texas almost gets upset by Houston. I mean, Duke played Florida State well for a long time in that game. How about Alabama's second half? I don't know what Bill Berman told that Alabama Crimson Tide team at halftime, but holy heck, they came out and really dominated the game and played well. You know, it'll be a great game. But look, I think this, before we get into pro football, Jaden Daniels is the best college player in the game today. There's no question. I know he plays at LSU. I know they're not going to be in the national championship series. But this kid is really playing well. I know they played Army, so I don't count that. But he is the best player. Elliot and I were talking before the show started, and Missouri's going to go play Georgia. They're 7-1. They could be 8-0, but Daniels kept that from them. So is the Heisman, Stormy, the best player from the best team, or is the Heisman the best player in college football, regardless of record?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation because typically, you know, we see teams that make the college football playoff. It's their stars, right? Their guy that has carried them there. And it's unfortunate from an LSU standpoint that their defense has just been so bad. Obviously, a shutout yesterday, but like you said, that's not something that we can read too much into. But with the struggles that they've had and the losses that they've had, it just hasn't been there for him to have that Heisman opportunity, although the odds have shrunk significantly because of how well he's played. See him 6-1. On the odds board right now. And we've got a new favorite, by the way, for Heisman in Michigan's J.J. McCarthy, +180. Michael Penix Jr. goes from an odds on -140 favorite a week ago to now 3-1. So this is something that we're going to continue to keep tabs on throughout the course of this season. I'm just glad to see, like you said off the top, Caleb Williams dropping down that board. I'm a little bit sad for my guy Drake May. I cannot believe what happened yesterday in that game. As what were they? A 24-point favorite, Virginia getting their first.
To Virginia?
You're telling me.
I mean, this happens to Mac Brown's teams all the time. I mean, you just like to Virginia. You know, and then how about our boy? We'll get to pro football. Mario Cristobal. How about his game management there? And Clemson is no longer Clemson. I mean, let's be clear. Clemson's, you know, got control of that game and loses it in double overtime to Miami without Van Dyke at quarterback. I mean, crazy day in college football. Really was.
And even you wonder what could have been had Riley Leonard stayed healthy for Duke yesterday against Florida State. Yep. Now Florida State, the only unbeaten remaining in the ACC. But okay, that's enough college football. This is an NFL Sunday morning. We got to get into the nitty gritty of this thing, Michael.
Yeah.
And we got six teams on bye this week. So slightly smaller slate in my household, though. I am excited that the Carolina Panthers have the week off, so I don't have any, you know, serious screaming at the I don't have to deal with the inevitable screaming at the television today.
But next week there's no buys. This is the weirdest schedule I've ever seen. I usually think once we start buys, everybody starts, but next week there's no buys at all. We get a full slate next week.
Yep. Hopefully we get some more like normal spreads. This week has thrown me for a loop a little bit, especially with the different quarterbacks in and out of the lineup, which, why don't we start there? Bears Raiders is going to be the battle of the backup quarterbacks. Justin Fields with the dislocated thumb. In steps undrafted rookie Tyson Bagent. Jimmy G dealing with back soreness. Brian Hoyer will get the start, not Aiden O'Connell, which was a little bit of a surprise. Jaden Daniels not expected. Jaden Daniels on the brain. Daniel Jones not expected to start for the Giants for the second straight week. So it'll be Tyrod Taylor against Washington. Josh Allen injured his shoulder last week against the Giants. He was on the injury report most of the week, said to media he has no concern about the shoulder, but just good to keep in mind against the Pats. And then last but certainly not least for quarterbacks, Michael, Deshaun Watson expected to go for the Browns today, which is big news.
Yeah, and the line, shockingly, is coming back towards the Colts. There's a lot of people that like the Colts. We'll call them professional bettors, if you will, because I don't understand what the difference between what sharp is and what just everything else is. So let's call them guys that do it for a living and women that do it for a living. Everybody seems to be on the Colts. It doesn't make any sense to me when you break the game down with Gardner Minshew going against a top flight defense. But this line has moved back towards the Colts. It was with the news of why it was at one point when we thought it was a PJ Walker game and Minshew. And then it went back up to 3.5 when Watson looked like he's trending towards playing, and he is going to play. I mean, they said he threw the ball well in pregame or this morning. Daniel Jones is ruled completely out, so that's a Tyrod Taylor, Tommy DeVito game. Bet accordingly there. And so, you know, and then the Raider game. I mean, you know, the Raiders announced Hoyer is the starter, and Bagent is the starter for the Bears, and the line moved away from the Raiders towards the Bears. You would think it would have moved towards the veteran quarterback. Mm-hmm. Not so fast. And so we'll see how that all plays out. Two teams, both poor in the red zone. 32nd, the Raiders. 31st, the Bears. I think the under's in play there as well.
Yeah, the Raiders really need to win that game. And I would hope and think that veteran presence with Brian Hoyer should help them get over the hump in this game. Also in their respective lineups today, Aaron Jones expected to go for Green Bay, which is good. They've struggled to run the football with AJ Dillon. Eagles will get back Lane Johnson. I know that was a big topic of conversation for us this week, as well as Jalen Carter and Darius Slay defensively against Miami. Unavailable still Reed Blankenship for Philadelphia, and the Lions will be without starting running back David Montgomery and his 6 touchdowns of production early this season. And you talk about the red zone struggles there, Michael, scoring significantly down of late. Yeah. Here in the NFL. And you look at some of these totals, and all of the totals that we've seen, major movement, talking 3 points or less, have all been shifted to the under. We've got some weather impacting games this week, but also just in general, red zone struggles and challenges for a lot of offenses to get into the end zone here early this season.
Yeah, I mean, and we saw it in college football. I mean, I know you were working. The Penn State-Ohio State game might have been one of the worst play-calling games by Penn State I've ever. I mean, if I have to watch one more fullback or halfback up into the middle of the line, I'm going to go berserk.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that game off the top. Penn State, Michael, 1 of 16 on third down. Are you kidding me?
It was horrendous. I mean, I'm not sure Drew Aller's a bad quarterback. I'm not sure he's a good quarterback. But that offense at Penn State, I'm sure, is horrible. Like, there's no reason for them to be that bad. And on second down, to keep running the ball. I mean, if you're going to be bad on third down, try to get first downs on two downs. There's not a rule against it. You can do it, you know. So I think the scoring's down, and I believe this. We're turning down points. People say, well, the same amount of field goal. Well, when you turn down 3 points in a low-scoring game, you're going to keep your scores down. I mean, let's face it. People are turning points down left and right. I mean, yesterday, Ohio State turns points down. You know, you can make field goals. Why not take them? Why are people so against 3 points in a close game? It makes no sense to me, and I think that's why scoring's down, and I think there's so much of a copycat league. Everybody's running the same stuff. Nobody wants to be different. Everybody's in shotgun on third and short. Mm-hmm. You can't make a first down. There's penetration. They lure you into thinking they're going to run the ball. You know, they show you a gap to run the ball, and then all of a sudden two safeties come flying into the hole and you lose 3 yards. It's really kind of bad. You know, this whole notion of this RPO game and the Chip Kelly era that came into football years ago back in 13, it was to play fast, it was to catch the defense not aligned properly, and to run the ball in those situations. Now, you know, you're waiting, and you're doing the same thing. Like, the defenses have caught up to the offense. You got to change.
Yeah, and what you said about turning down points, like, analytics, we always talk about this, don't account for personnel, don't account for momentum or no-mentum in certain situations. So as far as those totals that have moved down, you mentioned Raiders-Bears. That goes from 42 to 38. Chargers-Chiefs opened at 51. We're now seeing 47.5. Commanders-Giants, 40.5 down to 37.5. Bucks Falcons opened 40, so a lower total to begin with, down to 37. And Bills Pats opened 43.5, now down to 40.5. Unders last weekend, 13-2 on the season, hitting at a 61% rate, the highest under win rate through 6 weeks since 1991, the second most profitable start for under since 2005. The best actually was last season. But like I said, it's been scoring down. And again, just to go back to last week and all the red zone issues, teams average, Michael, 18.4 points per game in week six. 18.4 points per game. There were a number of teams that won games scoring 21 points. That's insane to me in the NFL.
It's insane. And a lot of it is the red zone inefficiencies, you know, and it's a lot of it is, you know, guys are not, you know, they're throwing the ball out of bounds in the red zone, can't make a play. Last week there were those 5-for-31 teams in the red zone when you looked at the Raiders, the Bears, all these teams. And, you know, it's something we talk about, but you're going to have to figure out a way to execute. And today it'll be the same thing. Like I said, this Bear-Raider game, I think it's 38.5 on the under total. Yep. I mean, how is this not a 17-14 kind of game? I mean, look at how about Minnesota-Iowa yesterday? They called back that punt return. That was disgraceful. That was a horrible officiated play. But anyway, you know, when you look at it, I mean, it's 12-10.
Minnesota had like single digit yards in the second half and won that game or something. It was some ridiculous stat. I can't remember what it was, but just awful, awful, awful. We are just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. Stick with us. We're going to start cruising through each and every game next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can check the top VSiN experts leaderboard as well to view betting records, profit, and ROI and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can sign up for just $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. And that page, I think, is super valuable for people, especially early on in the week, because you hear a lot of our experts on the shows later on in the week saying, I got this number, but it's no longer available. Yeah. If you're checking out the picks page, you can get ahead of it a little bit, right, Michael?
No question. Like Seattle. I mean, I love Seattle this week. I gave it out on Chris Russo. It was 7.5. Now this line's up to 8.5 today on Sunday. You know, a line that I took on Russo, I took the Steelers and 3, and now that Steeler line is going to 3.5, which I don't understand this at all. I mean, people are disrespecting Mike Tomlin. Keep doing it. I don't understand it. How this Ram team will block the front, to me, is going to be challenged. So that, and then this Cleveland Indy line, that's going to go from 3.5. Now it's headed back down to 3. Which is interesting. It was, I thought it would get to 4 by Sunday. It didn't. And then the Philly line, which opened up at 2.5 or 2, went down to 1, and now all over, it's pretty much painted 3. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like, you've got to look at these. And so what I try to do every day of the week is monitor the line movement and just strictly stay on the line movement. What's moving it? Why does it move? Sometimes the Patriot game today is another example. Opened up at 9, kind of settled during the week at 8.5, got to 8, now it's down to 7.5, going towards 7. Shocking, right? Like, where's this Patriot love coming from? You know, I understand Josh Allen didn't play well last week. I understand Buffalo's kind of beat up. But Buffalo has, in the last 3 games, they've dominated them by over 12 points in point of margin. The last time the Patriots won the game was the win game in Buffalo. So now it's 7.5. It's moving. It's trending towards 7. If you like Buffalo, you better take it. understanding, Stormy, there's going to be wind factors out there in a lot of games.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I was going to follow up. That game, as well as the Eagles one that you just mentioned, Commanders, Giants, Cardinals, Seahawks, Lions, Ravens, all with potential wind and or rain. I guess a chance of showers out there in Seattle, but we were joking in the commercial break. That's just a Tuesday in Seattle. We're used to that.
Come on.
Which one of these games or a couple you think the weather will really have an impact with the style of play that these teams like to have?
Well, I think let's start in Baltimore. You got Brad Rogers as your official, right? Baltimore opened up -2. It's moved to 3, and now it might get to 3.5 before we kick it off. I think a lot of the reason this is moving towards Baltimore is because of the injuries to the running back. We know Montgomery's not going to play, but Gibbs will play, right? Gibbs will play. And so that's important. And I think the other area why Baltimore could be taking professional money is because Detroit has struggled against movement quarterbacks, right? Lamar Jackson's sensational. In 16 games against the NFC, he's 15-1 straight up. But he's only 7-9 against the spread in those games. He's really good against the NFC. And then when you combine the fact, Stormy, that the Lions have struggled to handle movement quarterbacks. So the two games against the Bears last year with Justin Fields, they gave up over 200 yards rushing. To the Buffalo Bills with Josh Allen, when he was the main runner of their team, they gave up 164. So this Lions defense is going to have to handle it. But here's what I believe more than anything. I think Lamar Jackson's playing sensational this year. I think he's having a great year throwing the football. His percentage of bad throws is down to 14.8%, which is the lowest it's been in his career. That's remarkable. And so he can throw the ball with velocity through bad wind. Now, he's had a lot of drops. He's had a lot of drops so far. But I thought his three quarters, he threw the interception out there. I thought he played really, really good against Tennessee. And Tennessee wanted him to throw the ball, and he was great. On the other side, Goff has made a lot of people money. And it's surprising how no one wants to really do this, to bet Detroit and why it's moving there. But Goff has been goo. And Goff is like Lamar. He's having the best year of his career, too. You know, throwing it. He's at 14.4% of bad throws. And 81% of the time, he's on target. That doesn't mean he completes them. That means he puts the ball in the right spot. 81% of the time is remarkable.
Yeah, Michael, earlier this week, I put in a 20-1 Jared Goff for MVP ticket. He has played great, and the Lions as a whole team have played really well, 5-1 to start the season. And that one loss was in overtime, right? So this is a team that I feel like has a lot of things trending in the right direction. The note that you mentioned about their struggles against running quarterbacks I thought was interesting, especially because of how improved they've been defensively overall, particularly against the run, the best team in the league right now against the run. Yeah. But against running quarterbacks, 21st in yards per rush allowed to quarterbacks this season. Also, just to kind of put a bow on the injuries here, you mentioned Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be back after missing a couple of games. Dan Campbell, when talking about Gibbs this week, said, "I'd like to say we want to be careful with him, but the reality of it is we need him. So we'll go as far as he can take us here, trying to be smart, but he's got to go." So how many touches, I guess, should we anticipate for Jahmyr Gibbs? You do have Craig Reynolds sitting there as well, who's been questionable. And dealing with an injury himself.
Well, it's really important that they, last week I marveled at the Lions because they couldn't really run the ball against Tampa Bay, and they were able to move the football effectively. Goff was good. So it's going to be the same situation. Detroit's going to have to cash in the red zone. This is one of the best red zone defenses in football. They're very, very good. And Detroit likes to play from in front. Think about this, Stormy. Detroit's been ahead of teams 99-40 in the first half. They get out in front. Now, this Raven team is really good in the red zone, you know, and the Lions have not been so far with their red zone defense. So I think it's really important that they get Gibbs going early in the game and play from in front and try to handle that. And knowing that they can run the football a little bit on them, but they're going to have to protect Goff. One thing when Goff plays on the road, if you can get to him early, disrupt him, force him to kind of think about what's going on. I think Carolina did it last year in Carolina. Make him react to different coverages and give him different looks. You've got a better chance. But when he has time to set his feet and throw it off play action, as I said, he's hitting 81% of the throws perfectly.
pretty wild too to think that the Ravens are 1-5 to the over this season because of, as you referenced, the drops that they've had, the red zone struggles. Like, they should be scoring significantly more points than they have so far. So something to keep an eye on if they can kind of get that turned in the right direction. Let's go to New York. Washington Commanders taking on the Giants. Commanders a 3-point favorite. Giants injury report long again. An anemic offense for them, averaging just 11.8 points per game. The most points they've scored in a single game by far this season, Michael, 28 against Arizona, and it was that miraculous second half comeback. Expecting no Daniel Jones, it'll be Tyrod Taylor again. How are you looking at this one?
Well, I think this game sets up pretty well for the Giants, but let's go into it first. Brian Daboll, the head football coach of the Giants, there's a sense of desperation. You know, coach of the year last year can be a martini, can be intoxicating for you. And I think that the pressure of having to duplicate last year this year is wearing down. Our friend Pat Leonard, who's been on our show several times, the writer for the New York Daily News, reports this morning that Daboll has taken over the installation. He's taken over the offense. He's back to being a little bit of the offensive coordinator to try to get this offense going in gear, to try to get them moving. Now, they've been very good against the Giants. Last year, they were 2-0 against the spread. Excuse me, against the Washington football team. But this year, they're going to have to protect the quarterback, which is important. But they also can't turn it over because Washington is not a great offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, Washington leads the league in sacks allowed. They're 31st in rushing attempts. They don't even try to run the ball and don't try to protect the quarterback. And they keep throwing passes and the quarterback keeps getting hit. And with Martindale calling defensive plays for the Giants, they're going to go after them. They're going to go after them. And that could create some turnovers. I think this will be a really close game. But in the last 2 weeks, the Giants have been +5 in the turnover takeaway column, which you would say that's great, right? But they've been outscored 45-25.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned those sack numbers. Sam Howell sacked 34 times this season, third most through a team's six games since the stat was tracked in the early 60s. I lean Commanders in the spot, Michael, but I don't feel comfortable laying 3 in a division road game. But an angle I think I might take here, Commanders just to have a lead in the first half, -110. Giants have only had a first half lead once this season. It was last week with 2 field goals against the Bills. On the season, they've been outscored 94-25 in the first half. 3 straight games the Giants haven't had an offensive touchdown. So that's, if I was going to play it, that's the way I would do it.
Yeah. Now, look, this Washington team, for all the fanfare, and I'm part of that fanfare. I was talking about how good they played defense last year. They have not played good defense this year. They really haven't. They've struggled in all areas. Yeah. And their front hasn't been able to take over the game. And last week, let's be clear, I mean, the Giants played really well with their offensive line. So, you know, if Tyrod gets some time and they can run the football, Barkley's going to play today. I think it's a low-scoring game. I'm with you. I think you got to take the home dog in 3 here.
All right, we are going to take a quick timeout here. When we come back, let's take a look at that battle of the backup quarterbacks between the Vegas Raiders and Chicago Bears. No Justin Fields, no Jimmy G today. We'll dive into it next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Basketball season's ready to tip off on Tuesday, and the VSiN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get our all-new NBA betting guide. It's got up-to-date previews on all 30 teams, futures and year-long player props, best bets on player awards, live betting strategies, plus advice on building your own NBA betting model from our senior NBA analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel. Give yourself an edge this season. Get the VSiN NBA betting guide. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today at vsin.com/subscribe. We are rolling along on an NFL Sunday morning, getting you prepped for all things week 7. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you back here on the Lombardi Line. And let's keep it moving. The Raiders are a 2.5-point road favorite against the Bears in a battle of the backup quarterbacks today, but it will not be rookie on rookie like we anticipated a little earlier in the week. Instead of Jimmy Garoppolo, it will be Brian Hoyer. I thought maybe Aiden O'Connell could be the guy that stepped in, but nope, they are going to go ahead and go with the veteran in Hoyer. And with Justin Fields dealing with a dislocated thumb, Tyson Bagent from D2 Shepherd College, Michael, making his NFL starting debut as a rookie.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think this is where you come to it. I think we all love Aiden O'Connell, and he can be a really good player at some point. But I think if you watch the Charger game, the game was moving a little too fast for him. And I think this Bears defense is better than people think now that they're healthy. One thing we know for sure, that you have not been able to run the football on the Bears all year. The Chiefs did in that game when they were really beat up. This team is, the Bears are fifth in the National Football League in yards per attempt rushing allowed. Mm-hmm. That's really good. And so they're front, they move, they're athletic. They're a defense that can stop the run. Now, they struggle against the pass, so that puts the ball in the quarterback's hands. And the Raiders, in six games this year, when they've turned it over one or more times, they've lost. Three of those games, they turned it over three times, they lost. They've turned it over once in three games, they won all three. So they've been prone to turn the ball over, right? And so I think the decision to go with a veteran, again, for me, I would have preferred O'Connell, but I can understand where they're going. It's the same way that the Browns went with P.J. Walker over Robinson.
Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
Yeah, Thompson-Robinson, because they just don't want to lose the game. They want to try to manage it. Now, Walker threw two picks, but it still didn't hurt him. But I think that's where it is. And you're going to have to throw the football. It's not going to be windy in Chicago, 5-mile-an-hour wind. It's going to be chilly. But you're going to have to throw the ball against a zone concept team that reads the quarterback's eyes, that breaks on the ball, and you got to use a little bit of savvy in there. Now, again, Hoyer, you got to be careful with him when he gets down that red zone. That's where he has been prone to turn the football over. So, knowing the Raiders have not had a 100-yard rushing game all season, have not been mistake-free all season, I think what they're going to try to do with the decision to go to Hoyer is they're going to try to avoid losing before they win.
The things that I don't, and like, granted, I fully believe that the Raiders are going to win this game. They should win this game. But then you look at Hoyer having not won a game as a starter since week 4 in 2016, when coincidentally he was a member of the Bears. He's dropped his last 12 games as a starter, the longest active quarterback losing streak, according to NFL research. But I he is a proven commodity. So I get where the Raiders are coming from that standpoint. It just a little bit surprising, I think, especially given the fact that we saw Aiden O'Connell get that start when Jimmy Garoppolo had a concussion earlier this season. So going with Hoyer today, go ahead.
It won't be Badgett that beats them if they lose. It'll be Foreman. I mean, Dante Foreman's going to be the back. And last week, they had 162 yards rushing against Minnesota. But before Fields got hurt, he was responsible for 46 of those, right? So he was running around early in the game. They're going to, the Raiders are going to have to play really good against Foreman in the run game. And they're going to have to force Badgett to make throws. Last week against Minnesota, Badgett, came in. He turned the ball over twice, and Fields was sacked four times in the game. Early in the game, he had 10 passes. He was sacked four times. So this offensive line's got to hold up. So I think both coaches are going to try to avoid letting the quarterback hurt them. That's why I expect to see Foreman really be the guy the Raiders have to stop. And the Raiders have been very good when they play against bad quarterbacks. They forced 5 turnovers in the last 3 weeks, all against bad quarterbacks.
To your point about the Bears offensive line, Michael, half of that O-line is either out or questionable right now. Nate Davis out, Darnell Wright and Dan Feeney questionable. That, not ideal for a guy making his first NFL start. Also, in terms of the injury front for Chicago, their corner Eddie Jackson and Terrell Smith both ruled out, and safety Jaquan Brisker is questionable for the Raiders. It's just Nate Hobbs out. But to your point about forcing turnovers, if they can do a little bit in that secondary like they did against the Packers and Jordan Love, that's a great way to get Tyson Bagent, who, what's the stat here? Last season against the Colorado School of Mines, Michael, went 19 for 34, 165 yards, no touchdowns, 2 picks, and 8 sacks, okay? I think that the Raiders' defense can be a little bit more challenging than the Colorado School of Mines. So
that's Steve Sable from the great NFL films. That's his alma mater, the Colorado School of Mines.
That's
How
great.
About that? Yes.
That's great. D2 powerhouse, according to Elliott.
If you are the Bears, you're just saying, look, this is going to be a low scoring game. Let's get it to the fourth quarter. Let's try to win it there. You know, we Matt Eberflus, that's all they talk about is forcing turnovers. They rely on their quickness of the defense. They rely on the speed of the defense, their front to control it. And they're saying, look, Hoyer's going to give us a chance. Hoyer will give us a chance. He'll throw us the ball. And if we can score 17 points, we'll win this game. Look, the Bears haven't given up over 20 points in the last 2 weeks. They've actually played pretty good defense because they're finally starting to get healthy. And both teams are taking the same approach. I can't let Josh Jacobs get going. I can't let Foreman get going, right? I got to make sure the quarterback throws us the ball. We got to make sure the quarterback throws us the ball. So it'll be an interesting game, and it'll be a low-scoring game. It'll be a painful game for me and the family to watch. I want to close my eyes, but other than that, I'll be there.
This is a game that I'm actually like weirdly excited to watch. And I will be, I'll be rooting for the Raiders. Like get hands on time. Like you have to win this game in my mind. The Raiders defense, by the way, with the exception of Buffalo hanging 38 on them, the other five games allowing just 8.5 points per game. So I like the trending upwardness that we've had for Vegas. Speaking of Buffalo, let's go to them. They are in New England this week. Down, we talked about it earlier, down from a 9-point favorite to 7.5, total down to 40 from the opener, 43.5. Buffalo's had two bad performances in a row, Michael, and I find it hard to believe they're going to have a third against a struggling New England Patriots team.
Yeah, look, I mean, in Josh Allen, in his 59 wins, 45 of those 59 have been by 7 points or more. I'm surprised the line's moving towards New England. New England has not shown us any ability to really play Buffalo well, right? They have not. I mean, the margin of victory against Buffalo, in terms of margin of defeat against Buffalo, has been 12 points. They've been outscored 139-81. And since the win game in 21, I don't know how they move the football. Now, Ed Oliver's not going to play for Buffalo. That's critical. They're inside. So now they don't have Daquan Jones and they don't have Ed Oliver inside. They'll have Jordan Phillips in there. But this Patriot offensive line, every week, it's a new combination. They can't keep anybody healthy. Trent Brown says he's going to play at left tackle. We'll see if Cole Strange plays. You know, where are they at right tackle? I mean, everything is kind of up in the air. Lowe's been playing right tackle. Will they move a Luanu out there and put another player in a guard? There's so many combinations of this. And, you know, look, they've had a hard time handling Josh Allen. They've had a hard time, and they haven't been able to. Think about this, Stormy. Josh Allen has had 66 interceptions since 2018. It's the second most in the NFL. Only Baker Mayfield has more. And he has the most fumbles of anybody since 2018. Yet the Patriots can't get any of those plays against him.
Yeah, there was a great note in one of the previews on VSiN.com. I want to say it was the one from Matt Eumanns taking this breakdown and talked about just how the Patriots have yet to be able to find an answer for Josh Allen in this offense. The points scored in the most recent meetings for Buffalo, 35, 24, 37, 33, and 38. And the Bills are winning games this season, have already won the season by 28, 28, and 34, while the Patriots have lost games by 34 and 35 points. It just feels like an interesting move here on the line. I'm still really trying to figure
out. It makes no sense.
It doesn't, Michael, but when these things happen, it's usually the right side come push to shove at the end of the day. And so I'm very, very curious to watch this game play out, if it goes the way that my mind and my eyes tell me it's going to go, or if it goes the way the line has.
Yeah, me too. It doesn't make sense for me. I would be all over Buffalo here. I know there's going to be wind. We know that sunny, cool day in New England, beautiful day. Going to be win there, but you know, maybe win does factor into this. One thing we do know, the Patriots, if they play with some energy and Mac Jones doesn't, like with against the Saints, when he throws that pick six early in the game, they just went right in the tank. They just went right into the tank. They can't do that this week.
Patriots looking to avoid their first 1-6 start since 1993. I didn't lay the points in this spot with Buffalo, but what I did do was use it in a teaser play. My favorite bet of the day. You know it. You know it. My favorite play of the day is teasing the Buffalo Bills and the Seattle Seahawks. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on, but I feel like Seattle, clear advantage against Arizona. These are two teams that were the highest selection picks for Survivor. So just get it through, win easy. That's my favorite play of the day. We're going to step aside, continuing to roll through each and every game on the Week 7 NFL slate.
This This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VSIN when you sign up. That's V-S-I-N, DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. We are cruising on a Sunday morning edition of the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. Time to discuss now an AFC West showdown between two of the top teams in the division. The Chargers at the Kansas City Chiefs today. Chiefs laying 5.5 total down from 51 to 47.5. This one's of those late afternoon slate games. Short week for LA coming off the Monday night game. Meanwhile, extra rest for Kansas City and no travel, Michael. These two always play tightly contested games. Do you think we get another one today?
Yeah, I mean, this line has probably been the one line all week that I didn't understand. It opened at 6. It moved immediately to 5.5, and it never changed. And here's why it bothers me. First, these divisional matchups tend to be close, right? We know that. That's just, forget the records. We know these tend to be close. This will be the 7th game Justin Herbert's played against the Chiefs. His 6th against Patrick Mahomes. One game Mahomes didn't play. Now, he's just 2-4 straight up, but he's 5-1 against the spread. Yep. These games are always close. They've won a game in overtime by 6, the Chargers. They've lost a game in overtime by 6, but every other one of those games all been by 3 points. So why is this line at 5.5 and not moving? And when you look at the breakdowns, you see a lot of money's coming on the Chargers, but yet the line's not moving down. You know, and so to me, there's a little bit of that bothers me. But I do know this. Herbert didn't play well last week. He missed throws that we've seen him make in the past, right? And I don't think he's going to play that poorly. I know the Chiefs' defense is really good. I get all that. But the Chargers can move the football. And they have a way of playing Mahomes fairly well. I mean, look, we talk about the Chargers. We talk about the Chiefs' offense. I mean, they've had 15 drop passes so far this year. The second most in the National Football League. And they're desperate for receivers. Watson, who's been his big play guy, made a 33-yard catch against Minnesota. He's not going to play today. They're going to put Hardman up. I mean, he's going to play. And he just got there. Now he knows what to do. And I think the other factor that drove me crazy is on extended rest, which I get. Everybody loves Andy Reid on extended rest. And he wins games. But Mahomes on that rest is only 7-7 against the spread.
Yeah, the Chiefs have not, for as many games as they have won and Super Bowls that they've been a part of, they haven't been a very good cover team. And I think that just kind of reinforces that point. As for the receivers, I think it's really disappointing for Kansas City. Like, thank goodness that you have Travis Kelce there as your go-to guy, because Sky Moore hasn't lived up to expectations. Kadarius Toney hasn't built off of what he did at the end of last year. So Rashee Rice, I know a lot of people expect him to have a good performance today, but we'll see. And going back to the closeness of these games, both meetings last year came down to a field goal. Each of the last 4 and 5 of the last 6, to your point, one score games, 2 in overtime. And Michael, I don't remember the exact stat that you had earlier this week when we were talking about Justin Herbert after halftime having a lead. But while the Chargers have lost 3 of the last 4 outright in this series, they've either led or been tied in the fourth quarter of all of them. And I think that's really interesting that they've been in a position to win the game and just have not been able to.
They can't win close games. He's 6-9. Staley is a head coach in close games. I mean, they just haven't been able to do it. And for a defensive coach, for being this great defensive guru, you know, when his team has allowed 27 points or more, he's 6-23. Mm. And when he's allowed less than that, he's 21-5.
So
all the conversation about Herbert really comes down to, can Staley coach defense? Is somebody going to bring that up? I know he goes for it on fourth down. I understand that. I get that. That makes him a genius in the analytical community. It's brilliant, right? We know this. But at some point, when do they play good defense? And if they don't play good defense, now, Derwin James, we got to look at this at 3:30 today, because he injured himself in Thursday's practice, and he typically has done a good job against Kelce in a one-on-one situation. He's got to play for them to play well today.
I'm with the, I mean, and thankfully that we have you here to challenge Brandon Staley and speak the truth about that defense. I wanted to get your opinion though, with that thought process on the total, because both of these teams this year, just two games that have gone to the over respectively, but over the last three seasons in this series, these two have combined for an average of 54.3 points per game over those six. Do you think that we could get kind of a throw for throw situation with Mahomes and Justin Herbert if some of those wideouts get it together?
Yeah, well, I mean, but I keep waiting for the wideouts to get it together, and I don't see it happening.
Okay.
Again, they drop too many passes. You know, we know Andy doesn't want to call any runs. I mean, you know, one thing I think when you see it, you could certainly think that they could call more runs. I mean, they're 11th in the league in a yards per attempt rushing, but, you know, and they're 7th in the league in passing. But it's interesting. They've turned the ball over more than we've ever seen them turn it over, right? They're 7th in the they're 20th in the league in turnovers. And I think they got to be really careful. The Chargers have only turned the ball over three times all season, all year, you know. But the problem with the Chargers is they get outscored in the second half. You know, and the other problem with the Chargers is, you know, I know Kellen Moore's a guru. I know he's the greatest offensive coordinator in all of football, that he basically, once he started calling plays, the game changed completely. But let's just put some things in perspective. When Joe Lombardi, no relation, was calling plays last year for them, they controlled the ball for over 30 minutes. And they played less defense, which is important when you're a bad defense. This year, they only control the ball 28-30. They're playing more defense than they've ever played before. Why? It's the same reason why McCarthy didn't want more. He doesn't keep the game engaged. You've got to be able to pace the game to help your defense. It's not being conservative, right? It's being able to understand the situation. It's Eric Bieniemy's problem in Washington. You can call all the passes you want. Your quarterback's getting killed and your defense is on the field.
Okay, we go from a defense that's struggling to the best one in the entire NFL in the Cleveland Browns, who also appear to be getting their quarterback back today in Deshaun Watson. He's been progressing at practice, took first-team reps at the walkthrough yesterday, is expected to start today, barring a pregame setback. Yet that line, after an early-in-the-week initial move, sitting there at 3, has kind of stood pat. So the Browns, a 3-point road favorite against Indianapolis, total 41. And we know Anthony Richardson done for the season for Indy. It'll be Gardner Minshew once again.
Well, you know, this is a, you know, you say the Raiders, this is a must win for the Raiders. Look, I think the Raiders are not a good enough team to go into a game thinking they can beat anybody. They can play with anybody and they can lose to anybody. But this is a must win for the Browns, because if you're going to pay your quarterback $250 million and you're going to have a team that basically has spent a lot of money and you've got a Super Bowl contender, you should be able to come into Indianapolis with Gardner Minshew, who is 2-11 in the last 13 starts, right? And he's 2-10 against the spread in his last 12 starts. Like, you should win this game. The problem is, are we sure Watson's a good player? I mean, this Cleveland team is 31st in the league on third down. And can they move the football with any consistency? Right, we know that their defense is going to show up. I mean, they've only given up 200 yards passing. They've only given up 200 yards passing to one team, Pittsburgh, and 71 of those yards came on one play. They're number one in any statistical category you want to, whether it's DVOA, whether it's something else. They're great. The numbers don't lie. You know, the numbers don't lie. They don't give up first downs in games. They really don't. I mean, they keep it. They've only allowed 52 first downs in five games. That's a little more than 10. And 31 of them came in the last 2 weeks.
Yep.
Think about that, Stormy. So how does Minshew, who we know is not a great player, with no great receivers, okay, hard time running the ball on Cleveland, right? Like, the most yards they gave up was Baltimore. They gave up 131 rushing. Other than that, nobody really runs the ball on them with any consistency. So you can't run it on them. The receivers aren't explosive, so you're not going to throw the ball on Cleveland. Like, how does the Browns not win this by more than 3, and yet the line's moving back towards them?
Yeah, that's why it's one of those lines, again, where I love the 3. I laid it. I feel really confident in it. but it feels kind of trappy given the fact that it hasn't moved. But I feel so confident in this defense that they're going to have a, they're going to make this a really, really hard day for Gardner Minshew and those pieces over there. You think about how Minshew was able to step in instances where Anthony Richardson goes down because the opposing defense had that plan set in place for Anthony Richardson, not for Gardner Minshew. When you're planning for Gardner Minshew, I think it's a very different element. And so, yeah, I love the Browns in this spot. I think they get it done. I just hope Watson can do enough to make sure that they have at least some productivity scoring. First time that he has played since dealing with that deep bruise in his rotator cuff. Okay, we are going to, that hour one absolutely flew by, but we got through half of the slate here for Sunday. Hour two will roll on next here on the Lombardi Line as we continue the DraftKings Sunday pregame power up. For anybody watching on VSiN, remember you can find DraftKings Network on your smart TV. Just download the Roku channel, Samsung TV Plus, or Zumo Play. But we will be back with hour two in a moment. Keep it locked right here on the Lombardi Line.